the volume.
Hey guys, welcome to the sessions. Today I have got Kenny King in the hot seat. You, of course, may know him from Impact Wrestling. You may know him from many moons ago, from his time at Tough Enough, from The Bachelorette, all of the many different hats that Kenny King has worn, and we get into all of the things. We talk about him being a child star and growing up in Orlando and the different shows that he worked on and auditions and acting classes and Mickey Mouse Club, all of those things that were happening in Orlando at that time. We talk about his time in Tough Enough. We talk about him getting into pro wrestling. We talk about his time in Chippendales, which I personally find fascinating. I love that that was something that he did and did it for a while in Europe, in Las Vegas. The man has done it all. And then, of course, his time on The Bachelorette and the spotlight that that put on him as America's Bachelor. I'm honestly still kind of pissed that he was not picked to be The Bachelor after that season. Kind of some BS, because I think a lot of people are really rallying behind him. Anyways, he is an absolute gem of a human being, gem of a father. We talk all sorts of parenting stuff as well. But yeah, just a really great conversation with a guy that is funny. We connected and would always be like, oh, my neighbor, when I was living out in Las Vegas. And now I finally get him on the show and I no longer live there. But hopefully he'll be able to swing around once AEW were out there for Double or Nothing end of May. So hopefully we'll be able to get Kenny King out to the show and get to hang out in real life. But without further ado, here he is. This is Kenny King. Kenny King here on the sessions. This is a long time coming. I feel like you and I have been DMing, having some conversations. It's time to get this ball rolling. And here we are. How are you doing today?
I'm well. When we first started this, there was no child. And now there is.
I know. God, isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. How's motherhood?
It's great. It is just great. Aren't kids, especially like, I feel like you and I can probably put our heads together on this one. Cause like having a little girl is just like, ooh, chef's kiss. They're just cute.
It really is. I remember because I mean, I've got a little brother. I've got nephews. So I was, you know, I had raised a bunch of little boys. And then, you know, this little girl comes and I can remember like the first time I'm changing a diaper and I'm looking at like, wait a minute.
Hold on. This looks complicated.
Wait a minute. What am I supposed to do here? This is. So, you know, my mom was like, oh, it's right to the back. I was like,
front to back, baby.
Front to back. Once I got front to back down, I think it all was down from there.
Talk to me about how quickly it goes, though, from learning the whole, wow, I got to wipe front to back. I've got this little girl, all these little things, to now you have like this full-fledged, like blossoming woman that's just this like beautiful piece of work.
You know, the crazy thing about it is, and you'll get this pretty soon, is that as soon as you get good at one phase of it, right? Like, okay, I got down. I got the nap time. I got the diaper. I got this. As soon as you get one phase and you're there completely onto something else. And
then the game has changed.
And that is also simultaneously like the best thing about it, because like you get to see how, you know, once they get this routine and then they grow into something else and then they grow into something else and it's all growth. So, you know, we went from, you know, being daddy's little princess to, I was just telling Sparks boyfriends and she's like, job. I'm now catching up to this teenage phase, which is crazy.
It's so crazy how, like you said, it's like you think you've got a grasp on something and then it's like, just kidding, on to the next thing. And I feel like, so Nora's going to be 2 in June. And I just feel like in the almost 2 years of being a mother, it's juggling like, okay, I'm working, I'm doing this. I've got these things on the back burner. I've got all these other things, motherhood. She's in this phase, all this. It's like, I just feel like it's been really hard to get into a proper rhythm. Did you find that at all of like trying to juggle all the different things while staying on the ball as a parent? And like, I never know what my schedule is or what's happening. Like, I feel like I'm pulled in a million different directions. I don't know.
The thing is like, it never gets any better because, you know, she's going to then, you know, I'm sure dance or taekwondo or whatever she wants, soccer, whatever she wants to do is going to come up soon. So that's really when it gets crazy, because then it's okay. Then there's school and then there's extracurriculars and then we have to do homework. And then, so it's, I remember thinking, being so happy when she went from elementary school to middle school, cause that's like a full day, and then thinking, how did I get 3 more hours and I got nothing else done? Like, there's no way went by. That's 3 extra hours that went by so fast. So it's a crazy, crazy thing. It never lightens up. You get a grasp of it, right? You know, when you have a schedule and you have like order to it, but it's always going to be something.
I feel like being a good dad and being like a good male role model for your daughter seems to be pretty top of agenda for you as a human being. What are the things you kind of think about having a daughter and your relationship with her and her understanding, like her relationship with men?
Well, early on, I looked at some of the women that I knew in my life with daddy issues.
We all know a few.
Oh, right, right. And it was either the daddy issues of not being, you know, hugged enough or being hugged too much. And it was just one of those things like, well, what kind of person do I want to raise and what kind of relationship do I want to have with her? You have to go through certain phases to get to like where I'm at now. Right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I always wanted it to be a situation where one day she called me and said, Dad, this guy said, you know, X, Y, Z. And I laughed at him and told him, you know, my dad said you were going to say that. And then I was just going to be like, I'm done, baby. I did it. Like, don't call me no more.
Did
no,
it. You're good. Yeah.
But, you know, it was just that and just wanted to have open communication, right? Open communication. The boyfriend thing was what it took to get the final, like, okay, Dad, this is what it is. You know what I mean? I always give her props because it takes her a while. She goes around the block a bit, but she always kind of like, you know, lays it on me. And I attribute that to just always wanted to have just open lines of communication, whatever it is, right? Like I'll go nuclear on the inside, but I'll, you know, show her that this is a safe place for her to come and talk to me. And so that relationship is something that I hope carries on forever.
There's just something so cool about that father-daughter relationship and, you know, watching John become a father and seeing some of his edges soften with our daughter and seeing the way that he talks about her and lights up at like pictures of her when, you know, all the cute little things that these kids do. But yeah, it's pretty funny. I think when you're a dude that has this sort of like hard wrestler persona, it's like, no, we got to like soften up a little bit and like teach these kids how to be human beings. It's a pretty fun little ride.
It's probably definitely easier for little girls and little boys to melt dad. So
yeah,
I think we both got, me and John both got exactly what we needed.
Yep, 100%. Okay, so dadhood is going well. Let's talk personal life stuff because again, I feel like I observe your life from the outside. Obviously for me, a bulk of it starting with watching you on The Bachelorette. And I was like, wow, Kenny King, what a catch. What a catch. Also, I'm not going to lie. I was really kind of pissed that you weren't the next Bachelor. Was there conversations about that?
You know, it was crazy because it started and then it got to a point where I was a little nervous.
Okay.
Because, you know, there were the tweets or whatever. And then, you know, people would, you know, Kenny for Bachelor. But then there was like articles written about it and stuff. And I was like, oh, wait, because, you know,
some steam.
And it made me a little nervous. But I did. Obviously, it was never going to happen. But it was one of those things where like that could have been crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a huge commitment. It's a huge opportunity. But just to see that there were that many people that were invested and that many people that kind of wanted to see that happen. It was very humbling. And I dug it. I was like, man, well, thanks. You know, my little grassroots campaign, but
it's no just thanks. It's funny too, because like I feel like you walked out of that show as like, oh, good guy Kenny. There's a good guy on the show that seemed like you had good intentions and you have good fundamentals, like all of these things. Is there something to being the good guy that gets in the way? Do they need someone that's going to kind of stir the pot a little bit and like?
Well, I think that's, I mean, the thing about it is that it is a brilliantly done social experiment, right?
Sure.
And by this point, they've got it down to a science thing, and it's all comes through casting. You know, exactly whose personalities may not mix with this, whose will mix with this, who will make good TV, who's going to be a lunatic, like who's going to be who. So, you know, it was a great experience. But at the end of the day, like Rachel and I was our relationship was just like, she's just a great person. Like she's cool. We always were like real, real cool. So it's just hard to date somebody like that. It's hard to, you know, when conventional dating is, if I see you, we're texting, we're talking, and then to not see someone, or when you're trying to get to know them, you know, once a week or twice a week, and then have to hang out with, you know, 28 other dudes that are trying to date her at the same
time. What the hell? Like, what a trip to like go stay in the same room with less people. You're like, wait, you're trying to date the person I'm trying to date? Like, how is that not so cutthroat?
It is. Oh, no, it's very cutthroat. I think the girls are a little more cutthroat than the guys, but
sure, girls can get a little nasty. We know that.
Then it becomes like, you know, competition. You got all these alpha dudes in the house, and then, you know, but I feel like my season, even now, like I feel like we had such a core group of cool guys. We clicked. We still have group chat. And it was just such a core group of dudes that I remember the producers would be like, man, do you guys want to go on dates? Or do you want to hang out with each other? We're like, both. Going to the experience thinking that you're just going to hate all these dudes and be looking, you know, side-eyeing everybody. Yeah. And then when everybody's cool, it's like, oh, I got to go. Oh, okay, I'll be right back. I'll be right back. I'm going on this date. I'll be right back.
Let me go knock this out real quick, and we'll come back and we'll get down to the shenanigans that we were up to. How did being on the show affect your dating life afterwards?
You know, my DMs were very healthy.
Very healthy.
We're very healthy afterward. You know, it was cool. And even now, you know, people will identify with certain parts of what they saw with me. And, you know, I was just a guy trying to find someone to, you know, to hang out with me and my little girl, you know, and that was kind of the deal. It led to, because in Vegas is a crazy not.
Sure. How is dating in Vegas? Like, it's terrible. Couldn't imagine. Is it worse? Awful. Do you think it's worse than trying to date in LA?
I think it's on equal footing. Dating everywhere is pretty bad, I think, at this point. But I think LA and Vegas are, because it's the same type of people. It's the same type of facades and fronts. And, you know, people are just superficial. Like, well, what kind of car do you drive? Who, you know, what do you do? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Are you in the industry?
Can you do for me?
Yes. So what I was doing after, like, I was just kind of dating long distance. I was accepting, like, okay, she's from here, she's from here. But I realized that I hate long distance. So that didn't work out.
So wait, why long distance until you realized that didn't work? Was it like on purpose to have a little buffer?
At first, right? Yes. A little buffer, a little space is always good. Right. But it was just because I was just kind of over, you know, bottle girls and even like regular job nurses, people in Vegas, little kind of sideways too. So I just kind of was like, all right, well, let me give somebody from, you know, from Georgia chances. And it was,
sure, let's go to Nebraska. What's up in Nebraska?
Nothing.
That's so funny. Like, it's just such a funny little like fishbowl kind of scenario of like, oh, you're on this dating show. Great. You seem like a good guy. And then everyone's just kind of swarming you. But yeah, looking at like the Vegas scene, I can't even imagine what that's like in real life. Why do you live in Vegas? How did that happen?
Well, that's a long story. The longest of all stories, short.
Okay, we got some time.
So initially, my parents moved to Vegas when I went to college in Florida. So I went to University of South Florida, Florida State, and then South Florida. But in Florida and Tampa is where I ended up settling. And we were going through like a transitionary period, went from like 1AA to D1 to like different conferences. So it was a kind of a crazy period of time. And I really wasn't happy being there. So my dad was like, why don't you come out to UNLV?
What was your sport?
Football.
Okay.
Why don't you come out to UNLV? And I was like, well, UNLV's terrible. Like, I'm not going to go out there and play. Like, I'm good where I'm at. As dads do, and it was crazy because I would do this, but as dads do, like, he went and took my highlight tape and put it on the defensive coordinator's desk and was like,
love it.
There's my son. You guys aren't very good. You could probably use him. And I got a phone call, ended up, so to accelerate the story a little bit, I ended up transferring, but I couldn't play at UNLV that year. Someone in South Florida held my transcripts. They got lost or something like that. So in that, so I moved to Vegas in August of 2001, but I couldn't report on the team. So I actually had to forfeit a year of eligibility. So,
oh, shit.
Yeah, yeah. So in that, I'm actually like a civilian, regular person. That's how I ended up seeing, I'm walking on campus and I open up the it's called the Rebel Yell, and I see this big, "Are you tough enough?" ad. So
yes,
I'm like, I can remember watching the first season and being like, "Oh man, I can do that. I could do that." And then it was just like, "Well, kid, put your money where your mouth is." So that's how I ended up trying out for Tough Enough, because I was, you know, couldn't play
football.
Just
a little downtime. Wow.
Couldn't play football. And then coming back, so we filmed the show December to maybe February is when we filmed the show. The show starts up in like April. So April starts, and I'm supposed to come back and play spring ball, but I think I won Tough Enough. So I was like, yeah, about that. I'm not coming back to play football anymore. So the football coaches were not very happy with me. So that's how I ended up moving here. The first time, moved
that's
back to Florida
funny.
In 05, met my daughter's mom, had a baby, and moved back here in 09. So that's
wow.
Kind of, but really, I moved back here to be closer to my kid.
What was the conversation that you had with your coach as you're this like hot prospect and you're like, "I'm going to go be a pro wrestler now"? How did that go down?
It didn't go well. "All right, TV star, like, it's time to come back and play football, right? Blah, 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 blah." And I was like, yeah. Because what happened was, like, we filmed the show and then the show ran and then we went back and trained. And then there was actually the live show. So I thought I won. there was no real reason. Like, man, what if I go and I get hurt in spring and then I got to sign this deal? And he just couldn't believe me. Like, "You mean to tell me, like, we brought you all the way out here and you don't want to do this?" I'm like, "Well, not that I don't want to do this, but I did this and this is going to get me a lot further than this is right now." And I was persona non grata on the athletics department for a long time. I couldn't even go in there and work out. Like, I had to.
No. Oh my gosh. Okay. So you start to get the wrestling bug, obviously, but did you have really any previous experience other than opening up and seeing this flyer and being like, "Tough Enough"? Were you like a wrestling fan or?
Yeah, no, I was a big wrestling fan. Like, okay. I've been a wrestling fan pretty much my whole life at that point. But it was just not, it was not like today where there's wrestling schools, you know,
everywhere.
It was like, how do you become an astronaut? Like, there's no real way to figure out how to be a wrestler. So that was kind of the only way in. And really, at that point, I didn't really want to be a wrestler as much as I just wanted to be on MTV. Okay. So that happened. And then I kind of got bit. And then I was like, well, I got to figure out how to keep doing this. And after the first Tough Enough, I had noticed, and you know, this is kind of when the internet was just starting. And then you start to hear about how like these other contestants from the first Tough Enough would go to like indie shows and just completely shit the bed, like, "We're just terrible," and get booed up.
Yeah, yeah.
That was literally the last thing that I wanted to do. So there was a school here in Vegas that ended up contacting me, and they were like, "Hey, you know, if you come here and say, you know, we can say Kenny from Tough Enough trains here, then, you know, you can come and train for free." So I was like, man, that's
deal. That's me.
So I ended up training for a year after Tough Enough before I took any indie bookings.
It's funny because I feel like so much stuff like in wrestling is obviously based upon someone's respect for the business, and for you to be able to go in that way and like, "Let me, like, I don't want to go out and be one of those guys that just like throws your name on a banner, go out, have a bad match," because people don't forget that shit, right?
No, they don't. They don't. They really don't. Especially if you have, you know, a name or you came from a thing.
You're anticipating the fall. You're anticipating the person biting it. And then if you give them a reason to go, "Yeah, I knew this guy was the shit." And it's like, no. Let me put in that work. Get this ball rolling.
And I was the shits at first, right? Like, I was the shit. So I would have absolutely gotten booked in some place that I had no business being, against somebody that I probably had no business being in there with, and getting exposed. So it made sense to me at the time.
We've seen so many different, you know, an athlete from a different sport transitioning their way into professional wrestling. How different is it when you are a football player? You're used to working out. You're used to, you know, doing all the different things that a football player does to stepping into a ring.
There's nothing like pro wrestling. You can train like a football player all you want, but there is nothing like the continuous active recovery that you have to be in as a wrestler. Like, you have to be mindful of so many things at the same time And it's not like, I mean, football, you have to be mindful of a lot of things, but then there's also like a sort of reckless aggression or reckless abandon that you can kind of lean into when you don't know what's going on. You could just knock somebody over, right?
You don't have to worry about storytelling.
No, right, right. You never once have to engage the crowd while also still trying to make things happen and keep, yeah. you know, not kill somebody at the same time. So there's so much to it. When I first got into it. And that's kind of what bit me. I was just like, wow, I had no idea that just what this was. And it took so much to do it well. I remember training like to try to get in shape for matches. Like I would train for football and you can't do it the same. You have to train completely different. Your active recovery has to be always up because you're always in a state of getting down, getting
sure.
up.
You've always just gotten a car crash. You've always been in a car crash.
Right.
That was sort of my understanding as well when I, you know, I was like broadcasting in Toronto and working on these different shows and whatnot. But then once I got like really in the belly of the beast of working in wrestling and understanding that like, oh, your brain has to be firing on all different cylinders, even as a broadcaster here, because like we're still telling stories in a different capacity. I'm going to talk about a heel differently than I'm talking about a baby face. I'm going to stand differently when I'm next to one or the other. It's all these different things that you have to be thinking about no matter what the capacity is. And there's something really fun about like truly trying to wrap your head around the psychology, why someone's doing something, what the story is that's being told. And I think that's really where we all get kind of bit by that bug.
I agree. There's just so much to it. And if you have any twinge of perfectionist in you, one, you never like the last thing that you did and you always want to do it better the next time. And
sure.
So there's just never any, you know, I tell my students, if ever you feel
we're
like
never happy.
Yeah. I tell my students, if ever at this stage you feel like you had a good match, shut up. Shut up. Don't. Because I bet you if we watch it back, I can remember one time, there's guys that I broke in with here. We did this three-way in California. And I can remember we did it, put it together, and we're on the way back talking about, oh my God, we should get signed from that match. It was so good. And I mean, back and we're just putting ourselves over. They ended up getting signed to FCW. This is years and years and years later. And we found the tape of that match and watched that bullshit back and laughed. We're like, we were really talking about how we could be on the main roster right now.
That was my Mania match. Yeah.
So, you know, it should be like that, though, right? You should always think that you're doing well, but find the next level.
Exactly. You got to build upon each thing. Is it productive to go back and kind of, you know, look at everything under a microscope at this point in your career?
I don't know if it's productive. I will do it sometimes just to kind of keep myself honest about the things that, you know, things that I know that, I mean, there are things that I yell at my students about that I watch myself do on TV and be like, whoops. So you know, so that is kind of a way just to keep yourself honest, keep yourself just, all right, I need to do, but it's not terribly productive either, because it's then I'm picking everything apart and then
a slippery slope, right? Where now you're right. Like, now my confidence is in the shitter because it can be bad.
Why am I even here? That was bad. That was bad. That was bad. So I have to be careful about how I approach that.
Okay. So you mentioned before about getting into Tough Enough and how it was really kind of a platform. You're like, I want to get on MTV. That's a thing that I want to be a part of. But you were like a child actor, right?
I was.
Talk to me about that.
All of your favorite Nickelodeon shows I probably was on. Stints on Welcome Freshman. I was on a bunch of commercials for Snick. Remember the big orange couch? And
yeah.
I lived in Orlando, so I was a Nickelodeon kid. I was on My Brother and Me. I did the pilot for Legends of the Hidden Temple. I did motion capture for the Guts Super Nintendo video game.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so to be like that Orlando kid during that time, because it's really kind of funny what that kind of bubble was of all the things that were happening in Orlando of all places. What was that kind of vibe like when you think of, like, I mean, Mandy Moore is the first person that pops to mind because I feel like she's talked about that a lot, of being like also an Orlando kid growing up there, getting into the music industry that way. But what was that like, sort of that world? I think everyone thinks of like LA and Hollywood, but that really was the hub in Orlando, especially as a kid, to kind of get your foot in the door.
Yeah, kid for child acting, for music. I mean, and it's crazy because it was like we all ran in the same. I'm Joey Fatone and I went to the same high school. Wayne Brady and I went to the same high school. So it's a crazy.
I didn't know thing. Wayne Brady was one of those Orlando guys too. Okay.
Yeah, Wayne Brady and I had the same acting coach. Shout out to Karen Ruggiero and Mr. Ruggiero. So did Wesley Snipes actually.
Oh.
Mr.
Ruggiero got
Snipes also. So there's there's a pattern here with Mr. Ruggiero.
Yeah.
But Orlando was because of the Disney thing, and then New Orleans, and then Universal Studios opened, but Nickelodeon Studios was the first. Because there were like shows and stuff being shot at like Sequest, and like I think Superboy was shot at Universal, but there was nothing really like continuous production until Nickelodeon Studios came in. Once Nickelodeon Studios came in, then it was like everything from Nickelodeon was being shot there all the time. And then it was like, I think I did like some extra work or something. And then I was like, well, that's my dad was like, we did some acting classes. And then it was a little bit toward, I think my ninth grade year, my parents were like, all right, you have to slow down because you're not going to school. And and there were some
you
of
must
these,
have been making like kind of good money as a child though, no?
I mean, my parents were making good money as a kid, I guess.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm sure we were.
But that must
have
been enticing for them to be like, "Damn, okay, we got this." I don't know what your parents do for a living, but if you've got your kid also bringing in this other income, you're like, "Oh, okay."
Yeah. I mean, they were doing well, but it was a cool little time. And then you know, right after I kind of got out of it, is like when the whole boy band thing like really like blew up. So Orlando's like low key been a really big hub for like a lot of your favorite entertainers in general have come out of Orlando.
Does it feel that way growing up there as someone that kind of has those stars in their eyes? Does it feel kind of like that cutthroat? You're in Orlando, you have all the resources there to kind of make your dreams come true. Like I remember that kind of growing up in Toronto, and I grew up outside of Toronto, but knowing like, oh my God, this actor's from here and this acting coach, and I can go to Second City and I can go to all these places that are these like things that you can really put a stamp on your resume with. Were you like very aware of all the resources you had there to kind of make something of yourself?
Yes and no, because it's not really like a real place, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because
it's Vegas for kids.
Yeah. When you live there and then there's Disney, like my high school is literally right across the street from Universal Studios. And working there, it was like every other day, we're like, well, pick up my homeboy. I'm like, well, do you want to go to school? Like, no, let's just go to Universal. And so it's a crazy thing to be in your, you know, in your science class and hear people screaming from the Dueling Dragons. And
it's not
a real place. You just kind of know that, you know, that's, there's a lot of stuff happening. And if you want to get involved in that literally all you have to do is go across the street. It was a perfect place. And for that opportunity and still is. My, it was a girl. So I just saw Cocaine Bear.
Oh, I've not seen it yet.
But like there's like a main little girl in it, and I'm looking at her like, God, she looks like her face. Like why do I know this face? She's the daughter of a girl that I used to date that is an acting coach in Orlando. It's like, what? I'm looking at. As soon as I saw like
the credits,
and I saw her face, it's like, oh my God, that's Courtney's daughter. So it's crazy how it's even still like that.
Does it feel very like small world there in that sense of like everyone is really kind of connected? Because, yeah, I mean, shit, you rattle off some of the things during that time of when you would have been working. And it's like the Britney Spears, the Christina Aguileras, the Mandy Moores, the Justin Timberlakes, like they were all up in there. Like, did it feel like it was a pretty small little world of everyone being pretty connected?
You got to see everybody. Like, I mean, I did stuff at Disney.
Child stars are fascinating.
With when there were, you know, with Justin, not with, but like got to see Justin and Britney. Like I was a little older too, so like the Mickey Mouse Club stuff, I'd kind of aged out of by the time they were on it. But yeah, you see everybody because everybody's kind of at the same auditions or like backstage or so it was cool to then be like,
interesting. Yeah.
Oh.
Do you see your daughter having any bit of that bug?
Yeah, she definitely, I mean, she's crazy because she wants to do it. But then she's like, well, I'm like, all right, well, let's get into some acting classes. And she's like, but Dad, I don't like to talk like in public. I'm like, well, you know, that's kind of like 90% of it. So, yeah.
You can kind of hide behind the mask of a character to a degree to maybe
to
get
degree.
Out of that shell a little bit.
But you still have to physically do the act of talking in front of people, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, she had auditioned for some things. Like she's a dance, like she's been in dance for a while. So she's, you know, she's very comfortable on stage as far as like dancing. But it's the thing of, you know, once you're speaking, there's a spotlight on you that she hasn't kind of gotten out of yet. But she's also smart enough to be like, well, I need a degree first before I can do all that stuff at the same time. So I'm like, yeah, you're right. You absolutely can smart do all kid. That stuff at the same time. So
smart kid. Okay. So you go and you put in your year's worth of training after doing Tough Enough. Where do you go from there to start getting some buzz around yourself to start getting signed?
SoCal. Rick Bassman, UPW, shout out to Rick Bassman. Had names like Samoa Joe, the Prototype, Christopher Daniels, Tom Howard, Spanky, I think, was there. Paul London was definitely there. Frank Kazarian was definitely there.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the big indie that, you know, you're trying to get into. And then there's like smaller ones. So it's like one of those things like, all right, now I feel confident in at least putting together some matches and doing this stuff. And then I have to kind of now book myself as Tough Enough Kenny because it's been a year and, you know, you still don't want to kind of people to forget. So I kind of did Tough Enough, you know, Tough Enough's Kenny for a while until people started to kind of understand who Kenny King was.
Was that a good thing to have attached to your name in terms of getting yourself out there? Or was it something that you kind of wanted to shake to hurry up and get to the next point in your career?
It was a necessary evil because, like I said, it had already been a year since Tough Enough. And I think at that point there was like Tough Enough 3 was already even airing, I think, when I started taking any booking. So I took a different route from, oh, you know, this is the guy on Tough Enough, you know, let's get a bunch of different bookings. I felt like I had to kind of be like, okay, this is the guy from Tough Enough. And then it was detrimental in the sense that people, guys in the locker room would like indie lifers who are looking at me sideways because, oh, you are on TV, you think. Yeah. But once I got in there and I, you know, I worked hard, I proved that I could, you know, do it at the level, whatever level that was at. And then and people were impressed. Oh, you know, he apparently takes it seriously. You know, this is what he wants to do. And that's kind of how I kept getting booked. So by doing it like that and kept getting booked by just kind of showing up and, you know, knowing my shit is how I was able to shake the Tough Enough Kenny label.
What else were you doing during that time? Because you got to be juggling many different things while you're training, you're taking some indie bookings. Did you have other jobs at the time or were there other avenues that you were like considering?
Absolutely. I was selling timeshare to support my wrestling habit at the time.
Oh,
I was slinging timeshare on the Vegas
strip. People still do that? Is that still a thing?
Yeah. I was talking to a guy yesterday who said my brother.
Really?
I didn't think it still was because like the model has changed and I don't know anybody in the business anymore, but it was lucrative. It was for as a 21-year-old kid living in Vegas, making $40 to drive 4 hours to California.
Yeah.
I was making a good amount of money. I think like I was making like over $100,000 a year, slinging timeshare, partying my ass off. And wrestling. So really just doing that. So
you were living the life.
I was doing all right.
You were doing good.
Doing all right. Yeah, I was doing all right. So wrestling. That's how I knew I wanted to do wrestling because I could have just stuck with timeshare and all that. But I was still paying my dues, you know, doing the drives and making no money wrestling.
But then Kenny had to make it clap. Talk to me about Chippendales. Okay. So things are obviously going well for you. You're making good money. You're wrestling. But we got to get a little extra scratch on the side here. How does Chippendales make its way into your life?
All right. So let me just clarify that I've never once ever in my life ever made a clap. Let's just put that out there because that's a soundbite that will travel forever. Now that we got that all out the way. So it's funny. That's how everything was. So watch how everything ties in together, right?
Okay.
There was a guy that I know from Orlando that was living with me. It was but me and a buddy of mine that we were renting a house. He was the singer for the European Chippendales tour. And he wrote three songs written on the No Strings Attached, the NSYNC album.
Excuse us. Okay.
Right. So he's an Orlando guy also, right? He just happened to be moved out to Vegas. So he was like, hey man, do you want to, would you think about like wanting to travel, like go on tour with Chippendales? And I was like, no, I'm cool. Thanks. He's like, nah, man, but like, you might want to do this. This is a pretty cool gig. I was like, yeah, no, I'm cool. And I think it was his birthday. He was like, yo, it's my birthday. We're going to go to Chippendales. And, you know, so you can see what the show. I was like, bro, I don't want to do this. Why do you think, what makes you think I want to go and watch a bunch of dudes in banana hammocks and oil each other out? Like, I'm chill. I'm cool. It's my birthday, bro. Like, you don't have a choice. All right, fine. Right. Whatever. I go on to protest. And then I go to the show and then I see 600-700 women in the audience. And then I see what it is, which is not really. It's different. It's not like like a strip club or like Magic Mike. It's actually like a choreographed show where there's like set changes and wardrobe and stuff like that. So I'm looking at choreography. I'm like, all right, that's like wrestling spots. That's all right. And then I'm looking at these 700 women go crazy in the crowd. I'm like, I'm tripping.
The wallet's out. Yeah.
I'm tripping. But even then there's no tips. Like, you get paid per show.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Afterward, there's pictures where the women can come up and take pictures. And that's like kind of like how the only tipping situation, but it's not even that. But I was like, well, you know what? I ain't doing nothing this summer. I could take a month off. And so I went to Europe for 2 months. My very first, we did the Berlin Arena, and my very first show at Chippendales, we drew like 8,000 women. And I hadn't been at a wrestling show that had more than 500 people. So I'm like, what is going on? So there are these big stadium shows, and it was, so that's how that happened. That happened.
Oh. God.
Right before I met my daughter's mom, I did some tours of Chippendales, and then I moved to Florida, and then I quit Chippendales. And then
wow, what a great little chapter in your life.
But then I moved back to Vegas.
And then
the show, there's only like, so there's the European tour, and then there's the Vegas show. And the Vegas show is like, there's 10 guys, and it's like, you have to either die or get fired to get out of the show. And then I end up running to one of the guys, and he's like, hey, man, you know, like, are you back? You need to be back in the Vegas show, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, nah, that ship has sailed. I'm cool. About an hour later, I get a phone call from the producer like, what's up, man? I got back in the Vegas show. I did the Vegas show from 2010 to 2015, was on three number one selling calendars in the world.
I feel like you're just like destined. You're like that guy. You've done Chippendales. You're out as a professional wrestler. You're a child actor. Like, the spotlight is just meant to be on you.
I tried the office 9-to-5 timeshare thing, and I break out in hives. So it's not my thing.
How different is a Chippendales locker room than a wrestling locker room?
Do you know who asked me that question once?
Huh?
Kurt Angle asked me that question. Right? And it's remarkably similar. It's the same type of guys, the same insecurities, the same backstabbing bullshit, literally interchanging. It's hilarious in that respect.
It really is the same in terms of like, all right, we've got the little oil station before we walk out the curtain. Everyone spray your hair down. You've got your gear. There's, you know, you got your tanner. Make sure everything's where it needs to be.
Here's some weights. Here's some bands.
Yeah. All of that. Okay. So here's a fun question. If you were to put together your lineup of Chippendales dancers, performers with professional wrestlers, who would your crew be?
How many do I get?
You said 10 for Vegas. That seems like a lot to put you on the spot to answer, but do we want 7?
Let's go Finn Balor for the abs.
Sure.
Let's go Bobby Lashley just for the sheer size. Let's go Ziggler for the hair.
Oh, Ziggler, you know, is good for it. He's good for it for sure.
Ziggler for the hair.
He's got the booty shakedown too.
Yes. He does. Yes. Willing back for the okay. hips. Nobody got the hips like Willie. And the funny thing is, he said, we were going back and forth one day, because that's my boy. We go back and forth. And I said, you know what, Willie, you keep talking shit to me, and I'm going to open up the Chunkendales, and I'm going to feature you as the main guy. So Willie can be our Chunkendale. Shout out to Willie Mack.
I love it.
I think we got to put Roman in there he's just a fucking
he's
big
he's got sex. That essence. The
I think that's 6. We got one more. Let's see.
Yeah, let's get one more in there. You obviously would be the lead.
I'm the guy. Yeah.
You're the guy.
I'm the feature.
You got to orchestrate the whole show, but we got to have the background performers. Bobby Lashley doing Chippendales is very funny to me.
Hilarious. To me, that's the best thing, right? I think the best thing would be we would have to have like a backstage camera for Bobby learning the choreography.
To learn to like dance though? Like, did that come naturally to you?
Hell no. Like, I don't know. eight counts. One, no. Two. First it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And then they change it 1 and 2. And I'm like, wait, what? Wait, what? So no, it was, it took a while for me to learn. Cause we had like, I mean, we had a like shoot guy named Glenn Packard. He's a real like a shoot Hollywood choreographer. Yeah. So, and he was, you know, very patient with me. So I appreciate it.
That's pretty cool though, to like be in Vegas and have a job like that where you're like, I get to go do my thing, but then I'm actually just going home from here. Like, I feel like I always thought that like when I lived out in Vegas, anytime I'm in like a yoga class, I'm like circ performer, dancer, blah, blah, mm-hmm. like you're kind of like mm-hmm. trying to like pinpoint what everybody's doing, but to go have a show like that and then just like drive back home, get on the highway, shut her down. It's a pretty great little office job.
It was all right. Shows when I was doing it, shows were at 8. And there were 90-minute shows, and great. Usually, depending on if I was getting into any nonsense or not, I was home by 10:30.
Well, you weren't doing both at the same time. You couldn't.
Oh yeah, yeah. I was flying. At one point, I was doing Chippendales Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, flying out Wednesday, doing live Impact Thursday, Friday,
holy
Saturday,
shit.
Flying back in. I was doing 7 days a week.
How did you let your body recover? You must have been exhausted.
I was beat to shit. I was a little younger, so it was fine, but I was beat
sure.
to shit.
Okay, so you're able to, you know, wrap up the Chippendales party, just stay focused on Impact and on wrestling. Was it nice to kind of just clear your schedule and just focus on the one thing?
Yeah, it was. It was mostly because also, like, you know, when I'm home, I want to be with my daughter, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was also a thing. I mean, thank God during that time, like, you know, I have family out here where, you know, I could pick her up from school. We do homework. I drop her off with my mom or my sister before I go to, you know, go to work, and then yeah. pick her up. And there were even times like where they would every now and then have us like travel to do different things. So it was a lot that I didn't have to do all of a sudden when I was just focused. By that point, I think I had went back to Ring of Honor. So it was good to just have those dates. And just then at that point, I was really just focused on being a dad.
Is there more stuff at Ring of Honor that you would be interested in doing at all now? Or are we just sticking with Impact and Impact alone?
I like what I see over there. I would kill for another chance to wrestle Claudio Castagnoli.
Oh, yes.
One of my favorites.
Yeah.
I like what they got going on over there. You know, and if there's an opportunity at some point to go over there, then I definitely wouldn't be opposed to that or you know, any other wrestling opportunity
for the
next couple of years while you still have me.
Yeah, absolutely. So talk to me about what's going on at Impact now. You guys got a great roster over there.
We really do. We've got a roster from top. I mean, I don't even know where, you know, top, bottom, I like to say that, but from side to side, let's say that.
Yeah.
Right.
Coast
from
to coast. To side,
is just filled with amazing people that wrestle amazing at their styles, right? Like
yeah.
we've got so many different styles of wrestler. On the Impact roster, our women's roster is completely insane.
You guys have a great women's roster.
The Knockouts are completely insane right now. So
yeah.
Our shows, the people that come to our shows, we're doing a lot more Canadian shows, which I love.
Toronto loves them some wrestling. So like they're
it's
always a good crowd.
One of my favorite places. Too.
So good. Yeah. What's the deal with Masha Slamovic? I hear this name all the time. I've seen some of her like incredible work. Give me a little rundown.
She's terrifying. I really feel like she could kill me at any moment.
Yeah, she seems like it. I just started following her on Instagram and I find her like pretty fascinating.
Really cool. Really kind of, you know, keeps herself real, real kind of soft spoken, but she'll kill you.
It's always those silent killers that you've got to look out for. 100%.
The smaller ones too. Someone that you look over while she's tearing your throat out.
Yeah. Look out.
Yeah.
Look
she's,
out.
She's I've seen some of her stuff and been able to watch her just in the ring, and she's technically sound,
yeah.
crisp. She's she's great.
What all do you still want to do in wrestling? I mean, you mentioned kind of open to any other options and possibilities. What all do you want to accomplish at this point in your career? You've been able to do so much.
I feel like, you know, I'm still working at a pretty high level. There's just so much more that I feel like I could give. You know what I mean? There's so many combinations of matches that I haven't even had yet. My number one goal is to wrestle in the Tokyo Dome. It's great to have great relationships and the state of wrestling where it's at, where everything is just kind of wide open. And so our relationship with Impact, the relationship that I have with CML and New Japan. So
yeah.
all of those things lead to me being able to wrestle in Japan at Tokyo Dome sooner than later. So that is like my number one goal.
What would that look like for you? I mean, obviously wrestling in the Tokyo Dome, doing a Wrestle Kingdom, I've been lucky enough to go over there once and witness that, and just to see what that pageantry is like, what those entrances look like, obviously, you know, what the different style of matches look like. What does that look like for you if you're able to kind of book it yourself?
Oh man, it just looks like me going all out, like with my entrance, like with,
you
with
have to. My you have ear. To.
So that kind of, for me, completes the, I don't know what they call it, but it completes the thing that we have in wrestling, right? The ECW Arena, Maple Leaf.
Yeah, like
Maple
those, the Gardens. Infinity rings of wrestling.
Right, emotions. Right. Maple Leaf Gardens, ECW, Madison Square Garden, Arena Mexico, Mexico City, and the Tokyo Dome are the Infinity rings. So
I like that Maple Leaf Gardens is on there. That's a good one. It's cool. I mean, I feel like so many people, like, yeah, just to be able to go over there. Like when I went over with John, when he did Wrestle Kingdom a couple of years ago, and obviously I had never been, I was very much so in the WWE bubble. And for me to be able to pop my head out and be like, wow, check this out. Like, it's just, it's so cool to see wrestling from a different perspective, from the way the shows are put together to the way the talent put their matches together. It's really incredible. I had so much fun going over there. I need to go back.
It just shows that wrestling exists outside of whatever bubble that you want to put it in, right? And the art form, it exists and it thrives and it survives and it does what it's supposed to do wherever you catch it. And that's what I love about wrestling. Doesn't matter where you see it, how you love it, who you want to watch doing it. You can find something that's for you, because wrestling is really for everybody.
Agreed, 100%. Well, Kenny, I really hope that we get to see you and Claudio Castagnoli kind of tie it up again. We got to put that out into the universe. We did
Let's just do that
mere moments ago. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I'm glad we finally got to connect, and I'm out in Vegas end of May, so hopefully I'll see you out then.
Yeah,
that would be great.
You guys, I think that might be an Impact weekend, but if not, I definitely was going to pull up on you, AEW.
Please do. Yeah, that would be incredible. We're there for a couple of days, so hopefully, even if you are gone, you'll be back in time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good. We'll link up. We'll link up, because we did get to link up when we were naked.
I know. All right. Well, thanks for coming on the show. So good to catch up with you.
Thanks for having me. Great talking to you.
A big thank you to Kenny for jumping on with me, letting me pick his brain, learn all things Chippendales, The Bachelor, wrestling, all of that good stuff. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this. Wherever you're listening to this right now, anywhere that you get your podcasts, also download the AMP app, because we are on AMP Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. So be there. Be square. Check out all of those things. Leave a comment, like, subscribe, tell your friends. This has been The Sessions.